Well, here we are back on the Twang Trust, hour two. It's well underway, and it's time to visit the Birds Hill Park area again, huh? Yeah, and we got a husband and wife duo coming up here. It was nice to see them together. They did a song together. She sang with him in his set, and then he came and sang with her in her set the following day. Of course, we're talking about Steve Earle and Alison Moore. And we got a chance to, we chatted. I snuck into their tent after her set and apprehended them, basically, is what I did. And I hung out for a couple of minutes and I taped it, and we're going to listen to it, whether you want to or not. It's not the greatest quality. You got to kind of strain to hear bits of it. But overall, it's okay. It's there's no wind whipping through the mic anyways. It's listenable. And we find out what the heck happened to Lonesome Bob. Yes, we asked Allison, what's up with Lonesome Bob? And she tells us what's up with Lonesome Bob. So if you're a Lonesome Bob fan, like I know you should be, then stay tuned. Stay tuned indeed. But anyways, here's Allison. This is recorded live in New York City a couple of years ago when she had Dan Baird and a whole bunch of rockin' and a rollin' kind of guys playing with her. And they do this little T-Rex number that you know and you love.
I could have loved you, girl, like a planet. I could have chained your heart to a star. On the ocean, I could have placed our love in the sky. Turned you into a priestess. I could have burned your faith in the sand. We'll be right back.
TV, 'cause it makes them feel so righteous that they don't have HIV. Right-wing religious leaders trying to run our lives. Well, it's scandal after scandal till we're all desensitized. And losing every shred of faith that we ever had. It'd be sad if it weren't so funny. It'd be funny if it weren't so sad. It'd be sad if it weren't so funny. It'd be funny if it weren't so sad.
So I have to ask you, what is that, the Lonesome Bob?
Actually, I've been in touch with him lately. You know, we fell out of touch for a while because he met this girl, moved to Pittsburgh. They ended up having a baby, and she was great. But anyway, they split up.
We're in New York.
So he got back in touch with me, luckily, and he's working a job. He's doing really well. He's in love with his child, and you know, he's doing music here and there, and he's doing good.
Yeah, it's been so long since we heard from him. That's where I probably heard you first.
Yeah, love his records. Yeah. He's great. I think he's really brilliant.
How do you feel?
You know, I'm hoping he'll make it.
I got some good ones
right.
coming up.
But, you know, it may be that he's just reached the point where he's just ready to be a normal, religious kid. And who can blame him for that?
Yeah, you know? Yeah, for sure.
It's so hard to travel around at that level and try to make a living at this, that he's probably, you know, I think he's just feeling like, you know, I've got a good job, I've got insurance, I can provide for my kid, I'm just going to hang here and do this. And plus his dad got really sick, and, you know, he's going through what everybody goes through when they get to this.
Yeah, I hear you.
You know the drill.
Yeah. So I have this fantasy that someday you and your sister are going to record a covers album.
I hear fantasy being my sister.
There's that one too, but...
I'm just kidding.
But I dream of you guys doing a covers album together.
Really?
I play your...
You know, if we did an album together, it would have to be covers, because we could never write a song together. Believe you. We'd kill each other.
I've got a bootleg. I play your version of Life's a Gas all the time.
Oh, yeah? God, I love that song. Now get the rock band back out, I'll pull that back out.
Yeah.
I'm a T-Rex freak, and that's a really fun thing to do.
Who did Sweet Virginia first? You or Steve?
Gosh, I was doing it when my second record came out. When did you start doing Sweet Virginia?
Sweet Virginia was probably the latest Rolling Stones cover. I know what it was. It was El Corazon's tour. His buddy was in the band when we started. Yeah.
So he's probably a little ahead of me. But there's a song called, it's actually the title track to my second record, The Hardest Part. And I was rehearsing it with the band one day, and I was like, this goes right into Sweet Virginia. So I would just segue to it. Same buddy, the same way, you know. It's kind of, I mean, he does it different than I did. I did it straight ahead like they did.
I have this shtick every summer where I declare some song the official Twang Crust song of the summer. That's the name of the show.
Okay.
And Fairweather is this year's official song of the summer.
Yeah. So I did this morning, did you hear?
Yes, indeed. Well, here's being the official Twang Crust song of the summer gives you a free T-shirt.
Right on.
And don't show him, because I stole his logo for it.
That's the bluegrass.
I added flames, though.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool, because I don't have a T-shirt with this on it.
Yeah.
Can I get you to do one of these for me, Steve?
Yeah, sure.
I actually got you to do this at Merlefest like 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And I figured
since I'm banned from there, you'll never get me there again.
So. Pick your favorite.
The Twang Crust. Damn, you stole that from me, too.
Yeah, stole everything from us,
man. But at least you're upfront about it.
All right. Hi, folks, this is Steve Roll, and you're listening to the High Lonesome Sound on the Twang Trust. Wait a minute, Twang Trust, CKUW 95.9 Winnipeg.
By the time my daddy left, I fought the big war. Saw my first pistol in the general store, in the general store. I was 13, thought it was the finest thing I ever had seen. That's the bike I have on Sunday when I grew up. Mama dropped a dozen eggs, she really blew up, really blew up. didn't understand. Mama says a pistol is the devil's right hand. The devil's right hand. The devil's right hand. Mama says a pistol is the devil's right hand. Y'all, my first pistol was a cap and ball coat. Shoot as fast as lightning, but you load them out slow. Soon, my slow. Soon I find out you can get you into trouble, but you can't get you out. And I went and got myself a cool 45. Called a peacemaker, but I never knew why. Never knew why. Didn't understand. Mama says a pistol is the devil's right hand. The devil's right hand. The devil's right hand. Mama says a pistol is the devil's right hand. The devil's right hand. The devil's right hand. Mama says a pistol is the devil's right hand. Got into a car game in a company in town. Caught a minor cheating and I shot the dog down. Shot the dog down. Watching man fall. Never touched his horse, never had a chance to draw. Travels in the morning and I drove me into bed. Asked me how I pleaded, not guilty. I said, not guilty. I said, got the wrong man. Nothing touched the trigger but the devil's right hand. The devil's right hand. The devil's right hand. Mama says a pistol is the devil's right hand. The devil's right hand. The devil's right hand. Nothing touched the trigger but the devil's right hand. Mama says a pistol is the devil's right hand.
Winnipeg, this is Allison Moore, and you're listening to the Twang Trust Song of the Summer on CKUW 95.9 FM, Winnipeg.
Goodbye, so long, fair weather. This time I'm gone forever. Should've seen it coming from a mile away. I guess I wasn't counting on a rainy day. As soon as I could swear the sky was falling down, you were out of there before it hit the ground. Get out of town. I'm not afraid to die.
Yes, the official 2006 Twang Trust Song of the Summer, Fair Weather by Alison Moore. And thanks to her and Steve for putting up with me for a few minutes there. We heard Steve Earle from his brand new live record, actually. Live at Montreux. He's part of that Live at Montreux series. It's coming out in like 2 weeks, I think. Recorded last year in Switzerland. We heard Devil's Right Hand, which he did on the main stage Thursday night in fine fashion. He said he's actually recorded that song 3 times, and then that's the live version. So there's like at least 4 official releases of that song from Steve. On the Brokeback Mountain soundtrack, too. I thought they had actually just picked that up from, you know, Copperhead Road or wherever when they put that soundtrack together, but it's actually a brand new recording. Who knew? Who knew? We heard Lonesome Bob in there, too, from his last record, Things Change. And if you're an Alison Moore fan, you got to pick up Lonesome Bob albums because she's all over there. We heard It'd Be Sad If It Weren't So Funny. And yeah, if I don't know if you made out that interview there, but Bob is alive and well and living in Pittsburgh. And he's got a day job, you know. Folks got to do that sometimes. But I wonder if he plays in Pittsburgh. I know somebody in Pittsburgh. I'm going to ask him. I wonder if he still plays there. We'll get a caravan together. Live in Pittsburgh, Lonesome Bob. You think we could fill a bus? No, me neither. Anyway, and Alison Moore at the very top of that little set there, her live version of T-Rex's Life's a Gas, Dan Baird on guitar. Yeah. Okay, so next up, we've got like just a little over half an hour left in the show. We do have Greg List from Crooked Still coming by to talk all things Bruce. But first, I thought we'd listen to a couple of songs that we heard covers of at the Covers Workshop Saturday afternoon at the Folk Festival. Boy, every single song was an inspired choice. All 4 folks there. There was Amy Rigby, of course. There was Vic Chestnut. There was Chad Van Galen, who I didn't know from nothing. And he was hilarious and great. He did Dancing in the Dark. Wow, that was awesome. That was like the biggest round of applause I heard all weekend was his version of Dancing in the Dark. It was unbelievable. Chad Van Galen, holy moly. And what's his name there? Hoxley Workman was the host. And Hoxley gets a gold star just for talking. He's easily the most entertaining fella of the whole festival, sans music. I was talking to somebody and they were saying about his main stage set that he talked too much and he should have done more music. And I was the exact opposite. I said he shouldn't have played any music. He should have stood up there and talked for an hour. And it would have been 100 times better. I would never, under any circumstances, ever listen to a Hoxley Workman album. But boy, oh boy, is he a ton of fun to just listen to. And the last song of the Covers Workshop, it was great. He did the old Blue Rodeo Chestnut. What's that song? You know, that one everybody sings along to. I can't even remember the name of it now off the top of my head, but wow, it was something to behold. But we're going to hear a couple of songs that, of course, Greg McPherson was in that set too, and he was awesome. Wow, Greg made a lot of friends this past Folk Festival, that's for sure. And he did a song that I think I was the only person at that stage who knew the song. I'm pretty sure I was. Maybe you knew it too, but we're going to hear it. But we're going to hear it after this song that Amy Rigby did. And we uncovered some truths. We uncovered some hidden truths about the fella who does this original version of the song. And you got to go listen to the interview at twangtrust.ca if you want to find out all about that. Yes, indeed. It's some exciting dirt we uncovered about Amy Rigby and this guy here, whose name is Reckless Eric.
When I was a young boy, my mama said to me, there's only one girl in the world for you, and she probably lives in Tahiti. I go the whole wide world just to find her.
maybe she's in the Bahamas, where the Caribbean sea is blue. We've been in a tropical moonlit night because nobody's told about you. I call the whole wide world.
Let's kill Saturday. downtown and underground with the Twang Trust on CKUW 95.9 FM.
Amy Rigby on the Twang Trust from her album Middle Essence, or you might have picked it up on the compilation album 18 Again while you were at the festival. All I Want, that was from our little cover set there, although that was actually an original song, her original version of her original song, but you can find that song on the latest album from Ronnie Spector, of all people, yeah, with Keith Richards playing guitar. It's true, it's true. Before that was Robbie Foulkes, Let's Kill Saturday Night. You might have heard Greg McPherson doing that one. Ripped it up, good. Yes, at the Covers Workshop at the Folk Fest. And before that, Reckless Eric and Whole Wide World, a classic if there ever was one. Yes, and it's true. Amy Rigby and Reckless Eric are like the next generation of Ray Davies and Chrissy Hynde. Almost, maybe, kinda, could be, sorta. Yeah. And she did that one at the Covers Workshop, and wow. I just about wet myself. It was great. Unbelievable. Oh boy, that was fun. Yeah, Amy. We're going to hear some more Amy Rigby right now. She was so great. Did you see her at all? You must have. She played 1,000 times. I think she played more than anybody else at the festival. Workshops and hosting things and all sorts of stuff. Anyways, you know what I hate? You know what I hate? I hate when parents, new parents especially, go on about how, you know, being parents is such a life-changing thing and la-di-da-di-da. Don't you hate that when people do? Well, I'm going to do something like that right now. This next song, we're going to hear another song from Amy Rigby from her album Till the Wheels Fall Off. It's a song, I'm not sure what you would say this song is about. It, you might say it's about finding beauty in the mundane, or you might say it's about a non-religious faith, or you might say it's a happy song, a sad song, a bittersweet song, I don't know. You can make up your own mind, I guess, but all I know, I sat in a field and listened to this song. Amy sang this song at her solo workshop, and I got to sit there and listen to it with my daughter. I brought my daughter on Sunday for the day, and I got to sit and listen to this song with my daughter and hold her while I heard it, and I just about bawled my eyes out.
Took a walk in a small town Sunday morning just to see what was going on. Sat watching two guys fishing in the river, running through like there was nothing wrong, nothing wrong. They had their lines in the water 10 feet apart. Beer guts, t-shirts, me with my heavy heart. Don't have religion, trying to pray. And I never liked fishing, but I wanted to stand up and say, hey, I love you, you're perfect. Don't ever change, don't ever change. Hey, I love you, you're perfect. Don't ever change. Headphones on, she barely said hello, and all I wanted was to hug her, smother her with kisses, but I was cool, like, hi there, how did it go? She had chip nail polish writing on her hand. She was nodding her head to her favorite band, staring into space like she was all alone. But I didn't take it personal, it meant that I was home.
Thank you. walked into the party looking just like he had in the past. He came up to me and he didn't even have to ask. I tried to say something, he said, girl, shut your mouth. The praying papa was a rolling stone. Last night I was dancing with Jamie Ramone. Leather jacket and his little dark shades. He started dancing around. I tried to copy every move he made. When I reached for his hand, he kind of brushed me off. Then they played Hanging on the Telephone. Last night when I was dancing with Joey Ramone, they played the worst that could happen.
Little Fugitive is the album, Dancing with Joey Ramone by Amy Rigby. My star of the folk festival for sure. And you can go to twangtrust.ca to listen to our conversation. If you don't mind putting up with a bit of wind distortion, there's not that much. It's like 30% maybe is distorted. The other 70 is fine. You can put up with it. It's a great conversation. Go check it out. Twangtrust.ca. We will, however, squeeze in our Greg List interview right now, starting right now. You know Greg List, right? Banjo player in Crooked Still. They were a huge hit at the festival. They sold out of their CDs in like 10 seconds. It was they did a main stage tweener Thursday night and just blew the place apart. And yeah, by the time they did their solo thing on Saturday, forget it. They were gone. You could have got $50 for a CD, I think. They were so hot and happening. We're going to hear something from it right now, a cover of a Gillian Welch song. Then we're going to talk to Greg, who you may also know as the banjo player of Bruce Springsteen's Seeger Sessions band. How about that, huh?
When I'm sad.
Oh, wrong. We'll cut that out of the webcast for sure.
won't be able to meet my family at God's table. I'll meet my mother, my father, my sister, my brother. No more an orphan girl. Oh, blessed Savior, make me willing and walk beside me until I'm with them. I'll be my mother, my father, my sister, my brother. No more an orphan girl. Troubles, if you go my way, I have no mother, no father, no sister, no brother. I am an orphan girl. I have no mother, no father, no sister, no brother. I am an orphan girl. I am an orphan girl.
All right, so Greg List from Crooked Still here on the Twang Trust on CKW 95.9 FM. How does it feel to be back with your own band after being with Bruce for the last, I guess, 3 months or so?
It feels great. You know, it's really exciting because we have a new album coming out. So I get to play all these songs that I've just been dying to play for the last 3 months, but I haven't been able to. So I've just completely shifted gears, and now I'm back with Crooked Still. It's funny, shifting between these two worlds, the one world of sort of mega arena kind of wall of sound folk music and sort of more microscopic rootsy acoustic folk music. It's a really interesting thing to do. I used to be a biologist, and I kind of liken it to the Bruce Springsteen experience is more like studying enormous groups of animals or like whole ecosystems. You know, you're dealing with really loud music, really big situations, sort of very big picture performances and, you know, TV and large venues. And playing this kind of music, since there are only three instruments in the band in Crooked Still and one vocalist, it's a much more kind of microscopic endeavor. It's much more, you can sort of get much more into certain nuances of the music. So now I'm sort of, I feel like I'm a microscopic musician again. I'm looking at things through the microscope, whereas before I was looking at whole countries of things. It's just much, much kind of smaller, more nuanced scale here.
Do you have to rein in any rock star posing that you might have gotten used to?
I haven't had to do that yet. I haven't really had to rein myself in too much. I do dance a little bit when I play the banjo now, which I didn't used to do a whole lot on stage before I joined the Springsteen band, but I've just kind of gotten used to it, and now I can't really stop myself. Yeah. But it's nothing too dramatic. You won't see me leaping off the speakers like Motley Crue or anything. I don't even do that with Bruce.
How did you actually get the gig in the first place?
The drummer, Larry Eagle, had played a couple of gigs with me in a different band last year. The band is called The Wayfaring Strangers. And he was being a substitute for the drummer, the normal drummer for that group, who couldn't make a couple of shows last year. And so Larry was playing drums, and I sometimes play banjo with that band. And we met each other that way. We did a tour of Louisiana, and we even played a show with the Utah Symphony Orchestra, all as part of The Wayfaring Strangers, in various incarnations. Anyway, Larry has his own amazing serendipitous story of how he ended up in the Bruce Springsteen band. He's the terrific drummer who's been on the Seeger Sessions tour and recorded on the album. And when Bruce was looking for a new banjo player to do the tour, Larry recommended me, so I came up and auditioned. That was how I got it.
Oh, all right. Is there any chance of a Springsteen cover making it to the Crooked Still repertoire?
Anything is possible. You know, I actually think lots of Bruce's songs would make terrific Crooked Still songs. So I'll try to work on the guys in the band. We'll see if we can work in one or two before it's all over.
Were you involved at all in the rearrangements of some of his older stuff? Or did Bruce have all that when he came to the table with it?
You know, all the songs are arranged by Bruce, but there is a lot of input from the members of the band. Yeah. You know, and Bruce sort of, you know, Bruce knows what he likes and knows what he wants to hear. And sometimes you'll surprise him and play something and it'll end up staying in the arrangement. And sometimes he'll tell you to play something that you would never have thought of and it ends up being in the permanent arrangement of the song. So, you know, it was a collect. There was input from all the members of the band, but Bruce, you know, it's his music and it's really impressive actually how top of every detail he can be.
Have you ever heard him play banjo?
You know, I heard him play banjo on that song "I'm on Fire" on the Devils and Dust.
Yeah.
He's a great musician. Yeah. I should get a banjo lesson from him.
Oh, so as a banjo player, he's okay?
Yeah, he's
not
great.
Faking it?
I've only seen him play that one song, and it sounded great.
The Springsteen tour was a lot more successful in Europe than in the U.S. Any thoughts as to why?
Well, you know, I think it just took a little longer for the word to get out in the U.S. I mean, we played a sold-out show at Madison Square Garden and sold-out shows in New Jersey and stuff. There were some shows in the middle of the tour where people wrote that they were under-attended. But I think it was just a kind of a matter of time before the word got out about the band.
Yeah.
And I think the word is out now because all of the last shows we did were just packed with amazing fans. You know, I actually, and playing in Europe, you know, they're a very open audience. You know, there are a lot of great things about the European audience. They just for whatever reason they were just really open to it.
The radio show that I'm on, I belong to an organization called FAR, which stands for, I think, Free Forum Americana Radio. And it's basically a group of people who do, you know, roots-oriented shows. And they put out a chart every month, and it's very heavy indie-oriented. And a couple months back, the months that the Seeger Sessions album came out, Bruce made it to number one on the chart, which caused a big uproar amongst the, you know, the real nitty-gritty roots people. You know, they were using words like overwrought, bombastic, overplayed, and overly self-important to describe the record. Do you think there's any validity there?
You know, I think those people should come to a concert and check it out and see what they think about it then. Because I think really, if you see one of these concerts, you'll just see the guy's whole heart and soul is just on the line at every moment. And it's not, it just seems really natural and organic when you see it in that context. You know, I understand that people get a little upset when like a mega icon ends up on the indie charts. You know, it just seems a little weird. But I think I would recommend those people come see a concert and really, you know, see if they can get into it. Because I think they would actually love it. So I've known people who've kind of had that attitude when they first heard about it, and then I've convinced them to come see the shows, and they end up loving it.
So how many banjo players, and you can round this off to like the nearest 100 or whatever, how many banjo players do you know of have PhDs in biology?
In biology? Professional full-time banjo players, the number is zero. But actually, I did know a couple of people at MIT where I went to grad school who were in my department getting either working on PhDs or being professors or researchers there who did play a little bit of banjo. There was a handful, and that's only one tiny little, you know, that's only one school, that's only MIT. So who knows, maybe there might be actually large ranks of us playing banjo anonymously in labs all over the country. I don't know, I should do some kind of campaign to figure out how many of us there actually are. Maybe we can start a club or something.
Are the fields related in any way?
In a very abstract sense, I like experimenting with things on the banjo, and in that sense, you know, the constant experimentation is one thing that science and music have in common. I understand that's kind of abstract, but it actually is. That's a legitimate similarity there.
Yeah. Chocolate genius. Is he really a genius?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Your four-fingered playing style is a little unusual among banjo players. What led you to adopting that approach instead of the more common claw hammer technique?
Well, I started from like a three-finger picking background, kind of like a Earl Scruggs style, Earl Scruggs general approach. And just through experimentation, I just decided one day to put a finger pick on the ring finger, you know, the fourth finger, and see if that guy would work. And it did not work at all. It was a miserable failure. But I kept at it. And eventually it started to work very feebly at first, but then by the end of about a year it was really working quite well, and I thought I might be onto something, and I've been using it ever since.
Does it give you a greater range or speed?
Yeah, it gives you sort of greater speed, and just it opens up just a lot of different picking possibilities. There are certain patterns of picking that are really unnatural and difficult to do with three fingers, but they become really natural and easy to do with four. And so I tend to use those a lot in my playing.
How aware were you of Pete Seeger's stuff prior to this tour?
Very aware, actually. The first banjo book I ever started to learn from was the Pete Seeger banjo book. My dad had a copy of it in our basement. And and I've always loved his playing and singing. I don't really come from so much of a... I'm not really a direct disciple of his banjo playing. I mean, I have more in common with like Bela Fleck and Earl Scruggs and Tony Trischka and those and guys from sort of that lineage of playing. But I've always really loved his music, and even beyond just the banjo playing, just the whole, everything he stands for, and his voice, his choice of songs, just everything about the guy, I kind of love him, actually.
Yeah. What's the bigger deal to your bandmates, being Bruce Springsteen's banjo player or being Dr. Gregory List?
I think being Bruce Springsteen's banjo player is a bigger deal because it poses greater scheduling conflict. When I was a grad student in the lab, I got always sneak out the back door of the lab and make the gig.
Ah, Bruce. We talked too long there. That was Greg List. We were talking to the banjo player, Bruce Springsteen's Seeger Sessions band. We'll hear more Bruce next week. Thanks to Greg, and thanks to Steve and Allison and Amy. You can go to twangtrust.ca to hear the Amy Rigby interview. There's a bit of wind to put up with, but it's there if you want it. And if you're a fan, you need to check it out, because it was a pretty groovy interview. And, yeah, that's it. That's it. Al is standing by to get you wrongly wired. We'll see you next week, kids.
Get out the way, old man Tucker. You're too late. Get your supper.